Children of Dune by Frank Herbert, continued, Cassette 9, Side 1. "Will you eat when you return?" she asked, squatting once more by the bowl, recovering the ladle, and stirring the indigo broth. "Everything in its own time," he said, knowing she'd be unable to detect his delicate use of voice, the way he insinuated his own desires into her decision-making. "Maurice will come and see if you've had a vision," she warned. "I will deal with Maurice in my own way," he said, noting how heavy and slow her movements had become. The pattern of all Fremen lent itself naturally into the way he guided her now. Fremen were people of extraordinary energy at sunrise, but a deep and lethargic melancholy often overcame them at nightfall. Already she wanted to sink into sleep and dreams. Leto let himself out into the night alone. The sky glittered with stars, and he could make out the bulk of surrounding butte against their pattern. He went up under the palms to the Connaught. For a long time, Leto squatted at the Connaught's edge, listening to the restless hiss of sand within the canyon beyond. A small worm, by the sound of it, chosen for that reason, no doubt. A small worm would be easier to transport. He thought about the worm's capture. The hunters would dull it with a water mist, using the traditional Fremen method of taking a worm for the orgy transformation rite. But this worm would not be killed by immersion. This one would go out on a guild highliner to some hopeful buyer, whose desert probably would be too moist. Few off-worlders realized the basic desiccation which the sand trout had maintained on Arrakis. Had maintained? Because even here in the Tanzaroft, there would be many times more airborne moisture than any worm had ever before known, short of its death in a Fremen cistern. He heard Sabiha stirring in the hut behind him. She was restless, prodded by her own suppressed visions. He wondered how it would be to live outside a vision with her, sharing each moment just as it came, of itself. The thought attracted him far more strongly than had any spice vision. There was a certain cleanliness about facing an unknown future. "A kiss in the siege is worth two in the city." The old Fremen maxim said it all. The traditional siege had held a recognizable wildness mingled with shyness. There were traces of that shyness in the people of Jacarutu Shulak, but only traces. This saddened him by revealing what had been lost. Slowly, so slowly that the knowledge was fully upon him before he recognized its beginnings, Leto grew aware of the soft rustling of many creatures all around him. Sand trout! Soon it would be time to shift from one vision to another. He felt the movement of sand trout as a movement within himself. Fremen had lived with the strange creatures for generations, knowing that if you risked a bit of water as bait, you could lure them into reach. Many a Fremen dying of thirst had risked his last few drops of water in this gamble, knowing that the sweet green syrup teased from a sand trout might yield a small profit in energy. But the sand trout were mostly the game of children who caught them for the Huanui, and for play. Leto shuddered at the thought of what that play meant to him now. He felt one of the creatures slither across his bare foot. It hesitated, then went on, attracted by the greater amount of water in the Connaught. For a moment, though, he'd felt the reality of his terrible decision. The sand trout glove. It was the play of children. If one held a sand trout in the hand, smoothing it over your skin, it formed a living glove. Traces of blood in the skin's capillaries could be sensed by the creatures, but something mingled with the blood's water repelled them. Sooner or later, the glove would slip off into the sand, there to be lifted into a spice fiber basket. The spice soothed them until they were dumped into the death still. He could hear sand trout dropping into the Connaught, the swirl of predators eating them. Water softened the sand trout, made it pliable. Children learned this early. A bit of saliva teased out the sweet syrup. Leto listened to the splashing. This was a migration of sand trout come up to the open water, but they could not contain a flowing Connaught patrolled by predator fish. Still they came, still they splashed. Leto groped on the sand with his right hand until his fingers encountered the leathery skin of a sand trout. It was the large one he had expected. The creature didn't try to evade him, but moved eagerly onto his flesh. He explored its outline with his free hand, roughly diamond-shaped. It had no head, no extremities, no eyes, yet it could find water unerringly. With its fellows it could join body to body, locking one on another by the coarse interlacings of extruded cilia, until the whole became one large sac organism enclosing the water, walling off the poison from the giant which the sand trout would become. Shai Hulud. The sand trout squirmed on his hand, elongating, stretching. As it moved, he felt a counterpart elongating and stretching of the vision he had chosen. This thread, not that one. He felt the sand trout becoming thin, covering more and more of his hand. No sand trout had ever before encountered a hand such as this one, every cell supersaturated with spice. No other human had ever before lived and reasoned in such a condition. Delicately, Leto adjusted his enzyme balance, drawing on the illuminated sureness he'd gained in spice trance. The knowledge from those uncounted lifetimes which blended themselves within him provided the certainty through which he chose the precise adjustments, staving off the death from an overdose which would engulf him if he relaxed his watchfulness for only a heartbeat. And at the same time he blended himself with the sand trout, feeding on it, feeding it, learning it. His trance vision provided the template, and he followed it precisely. Leto felt the sand trout grow thin, spreading itself over more and more of his hand, reaching up his arm. He located another, placed it over the first one. Contact ignited a frenzied squirming in the creatures. Their cilia locked, and they became a single membrane which enclosed him to the elbow. The sand trout adjusted to the living glove of childhood play, but thinner and more sensitive, as he lowered it into the role of a skin symbiote. He reached down with the living glove, felt sand, each grain distinct to his senses. This was no longer sand trout. It was tougher, stronger, and it would grow stronger and stronger. His groping hand encountered another sand trout, which whipped itself into union with the first two and adapted itself to the new role. Leathery softness insinuated itself up his arm to his shoulder. With a terrible singleness of concentration, he achieved the union of his new skin with his body, preventing rejection. No corner of his attention was left to dwell upon the terrifying consequences of what he did here. Only the necessities of his trance vision mattered. Only the golden path could come from this ordeal. Leto shed his robe and lay naked upon the sand, his gloved arm outstretched into the path of migrating sand trout. He remembered that once he and Ganima had caught a sand trout, abraded it against the sand until it contracted into the child worm, a stiff tube, its interior pregnant with the green syrup. One bit gently upon the end and sucked swiftly before the wound was healed, gaining the few drops of sweetness. They were all over his body now. He could feel the pulse of his blood against the living membrane. One tried to cover his face, but he moved it roughly until it elongated into a thin roll. The thing grew much longer than the child worm, remaining flexible. Leto bit the end of it, tasted a thin stream of sweetness which continued far longer than any Fremen had ever before experienced. He could feel energy from the sweetness flow through him. A curious excitement suffused his body. He was kept busy for a time, rolling the membrane away from his face, until he'd built up a stiff ridge circling from jaw to forehead and leaving his ears exposed. Now the vision must be tested. He got to his feet, turned to run back toward the hut, and, as he moved, found his feet moving too fast for him to balance. He plunged into the sand, rolled, and leaped to his feet. The leap took him 2 meters off the sand, and when he fell back, trying to walk, he again moved too fast. "Stop!" he commanded himself. He fell into the Prana Bindu forced relaxation, gathering his senses into the pool of consciousness. This focused the inward ripples of the constant now through which he experienced time, and he allowed the vision elation to warm him. The membrane worked precisely as the vision had predicted. "My skin is not my own." But his muscles took some training to live with this amplified movement. When he walked, he fell, rolling. Presently he sat. In the quiet, the ridge below his jaw tried to become a membrane covering his mouth. He spat against it and bit, tasting the sweet syrup. It rolled downward to the pressure of his hand. Enough time had passed to form the union with his body. Leto stretched flat and turned onto his face. He began to crawl, rasping the membrane against the sand. He could feel the sand distinctly, but nothing abraded his own flesh. With only a few swimming movements, he traversed 50 meters of sand. The physical reaction was a friction-induced warming sensation. The membrane no longer tried to cover his nose and mouth, but now he faced the second major step onto his golden path. His exertions had taken him beyond the Khanat into the canyon where the trapped worm stayed. He heard it hissing toward him, attracted by his movements. Leto leaped to his feet, intending to stand and wait, but the amplified movement sent him sprawling 20 meters farther into the canyon. Controlling his reactions with terrible effort, he sat back onto his haunches, straightened. Now the sand began to swell directly in front of him, rising up in a monstrous, starlit curve. Sand opened only 2 body lengths from him. Crystal teeth flashed in the dim light. He saw the yawning mouth cavern with, far back, the ambient movement of dim flame. The overpowering redolence of the spice swept over him. But the worm had stopped. It remained in front of him as first moon lifted over the butte. The light reflected off the worm's teeth, outlining the fairy glow of chemical fires deep within the creature. So deep was the inbred Fremen fear that Leto found himself torn by a desire to flee. But his vision held him motionless, fascinated by this prolonged moment. No one had ever before stood this close to the mouth of a living worm and survived. Gently, Leto moved his right foot, met a sand ridge, and, reacting too quickly, was propelled toward the worm's mouth. He came to a stop on his knees. Still, the worm did not move. It sensed only the sand trout, and would not attack the deep sand vector of its own kind. The worm would attack another worm in its territory, and would come to exposed spice. Only a water barrier stopped it, and sand trout, encapsulating water, were a water barrier. Experimentally, Leto moved a hand toward that awesome mouth. The worm drew back a full meter. Confidence restored, Leto turned away from the worm and began teaching his muscles to live with their new power. Cautiously, he walked back toward the Khanat. The worm remained motionless behind him. When Leto was beyond the water barrier, he leaped with joy, went sailing 10 meters across the sand, sprawled, rolled, laughed. Light flared on the sand as the hut's door seal was breached. Sabiha stood outlined in the yellow and purple glow of the lamp, staring out at him. Laughing, Leto ran back across the Khanat, stopped in front of the worm, turned and faced her with his arms outstretched. "Look," he called. "The worm does my bidding." As she stood in frozen shock, he whirled, went racing around the worm and into the canyon. Gaining experience with his new skin, he found he could run with only the lightest flexing of muscles. It was almost effortless. When he put effort into running, he raced over the sand with the wind burning the exposed circle of his face. At the canyon's dead end, instead of stopping, he leaped up a full 15 meters, clawed at the cliff, scrabbled, climbing like an insect, and came out on the crest above the Tanzaruft. The desert stretched before him, a vast silvery undulance in the moonlight. Leto's manic exhilaration receded. He squatted, sensing how light his body felt. Exertion had produced a slick film of perspiration, which a stillsuit would have absorbed and routed into the transfer tissue which removed the salts. Even as he relaxed, the film disappeared now, absorbed by the membrane faster than a stillsuit could have done it. Thoughtfully, Leto rolled a length of the membrane beneath his lips, pulled it into his mouth, and drank the sweetness. His mouth was not masked, though. Fremen-wise, he sensed his body's moisture being wasted with every breath. Leto brought a section of the membrane over his mouth, rolled it back when it tried to seal his nostrils, kept at this until the rolled barrier remained in place. In the desert way, he fell into the automatic breathing pattern, in through his nose, out through his mouth. The membrane over his mouth protruded in a small bubble, but remained in place. No moisture collected on his lips, and his nostrils remained open. The adaptation proceeded then. A thopter flew between Leto and the moon, banked, and came in for a spread-wing landing on the butte perhaps 100 meters to his left. Leto glanced at it, turned, and looked back the way he had come up the canyon. Many lights could be seen down there beyond the Khanat, a stirring of a multitude. He heard faint outcries, sensed hysteria in the sounds. Two men approached him from the thopter. Moonlight glinted on their weapons. The Mashhad, Leto thought, and it was a sad thought. Here was the great leap onto the golden path. He had put on the living, self-repairing stillsuit of a sand trout membrane, a thing of unmeasurable value on Arrakis, until you understood the price. I am no longer human. The legends about this night will grow and magnify it beyond anything recognizable by the participants, but it will become truth, that legend. He peered down from the butte, estimated the desert floor lay 200 meters below. The moon picked out ledges and cracks on the steep face, but no connecting pathway. Leto stood, inhaled a deep breath, glanced back at the approaching men, then stepped to the cliff's edge and launched himself into space. Some 30 meters down, his flexed legs encountered a narrow ledge. Amplified muscles absorbed the shock and rebounded in a leap sideways to another ledge, where he caught a narrow outcropping with his hands, dropped 20 meters, leaped to another handhold, and once more went down, bouncing, leaping, grasping tiny ledges. He took the final 40 meters in one jump, landing in a bent-knee roll which sent him plunging down the slip face of a dune in a shower of sand and dust. At the bottom he scrambled to his feet, launched himself to the next dune crest in one jump. He could hear hoarse shouts from atop the cliff, but ignored them to concentrate on the leaping strides from dune top to dune top. As he grew more accustomed to amplified muscles, he found a sensuous joy that he had not anticipated in this distance-gulping movement. It was a ballet on the desert.